Oh, by the way, spoilers. I'm not gonna be sensitive about spoilers. If you haven't seen The Matrix, oof, you really should. You can join the conversation if you want, but your opinion's not gonna be very well informed. Anyway. Welcome back, nerds, to another off-season episode of The Week in Nerddom. I'm Genuinely Nerdy, this is my channel, and these are the things we have a lot to talk about, honestly, for an off-season episode today. It's going to be a lot of Matrix talk, because that just came out, and we're going to get into Spider-Man, and a couple other things that aren't exactly rumors, and then, of course, we do have the rumors, which is the regular part of the episode for the off-season stuff. So thank you for joining me right here on your number one source for all of the pop culture nerdy news. We have a little bit of housekeeping to get out of the way before we jump into all of that. Last week, you saw that we did not do an off-season episode per se. We did do a Christmas special that I was able to join in with the guys at Nerd Talk, as well as the folks over at What's Wrong With You podcast, who apparently I am going to be a guest on their show in the near future. So stay tuned for details on that one. And as far as the new season stuff goes, honestly, I'm a little behind. So we're going to be kind of rushing through January. It's pushing back the welcome back date in January, probably the end of January, looking at the beginning of February now, just because, honestly, I took a vacation. Sue me. So that is our housekeeping for the section. There is no shout out section for this episode, very partially because there aren't that many new follows, but also because, like I said, just got back from vacation, didn't take the time to do the shoutouts. I apologize. You will all be shouted out in the next episode. Honestly, I think I still have a couple of shoutout shorts that haven't been posted yet, just because, time off will do that to a guy. So anyway, thank you very much, nerds. Let's talk about other things besides rumors first. We're going to hit very briefly on the TV streaming. Happy Book of Boba Fett Day. I think it came out yesterday. But either way, it has started airing episodes. I have yet to watch the first episode, but I'm super excited about it. If you've seen it, let me know how it is. I don't really care about spoilers, so potential spoilers in the comments section, but let's talk about it down in the comments, because I will probably be watching that within the next couple of days, just as I'm getting back into my regular schedule of things. And then the big thing is the movies section. So let's talk about the things that aren't The Matrix first, because being quite a huge fan of The Matrix, we've got a lot to cover there. And it's not exactly what you're thinking, but first up, let's very briefly talk about Spider-Man No Way Home and how I was absolutely wrong about those leaks. I do stand true that that image of the three Spider-Men on the scaffolding looked fake. We went over it in detail in that episode where I said, yes, this image I think might be fake. At this point, I'm thinking it was probably something that somebody put together in a computer, as we well know it probably was, because it was shot in front of a green and or blue screen. So that they could use it for potential promo stuff. They ended up not using it, and so it leaked. And yeah, that I think is where that came from. But then I called that the Matt Murdock picture was 100% accurate, and it was 100% accurate. So super exciting. Spoiler alert, I guess, if you haven't seen Spider-Man, but it's made over $1 billion already. So if you haven't seen Spider-Man, you're probably 60 and don't care about spoilers. Spider-Man No Way Home, honestly better than I was anticipating. I was really expecting this to feel a little more soulless than it actually did. And man, the hype is real. The Andrew Garfield Spider-Man definitely did a lot for this movie. But Tobey Maguire Spider-Man should not be sold short. He definitely pulled out a lot of stops as well, as far as coming through and being some of the emotional heart of this movie. So It was a lot of fun. The biggest takeaway from this movie, aside from the fact that Tom Holland is a great Spider-Man, and I really hope he does hold true to his word and want to return, but Willem Dafoe is genuinely scary in this movie, and I thought that was freaking awesome. So, yeah, that is where we're at, Spider-Man No Way Home. Go see it. It is worth it. We're moving on. Our next thing that we're talking about is a new announcement on a movie we've been keeping tabs on, and that is Blue Beetle. This is news. Blue Beetle is now not going to be a HBO Max only release. It is getting an actual theatrical release date, and that is August 18th of 2023. So super excited to see Jaime on the big screen, because Blue Beetle is one of my favorite non-Batman DC characters. And then the other piece of news in movies is Batman. Specifically Michael Keaton. Michael Keaton is going to be, it has been announced by Warner Brothers, is going to be in the Batgirl movie, which is still going straight to HBO Max. So very interesting developments there. We have another movie to talk about ever so briefly that just came out that's been getting a lot of buzz. I heard good things about it before I watched it, and then I watched it and I was like, why do people love this movie? It is definitely hot garbage, and it is Don't Look Up. Definitely don't watch this movie. I mean, watch it if you want. I don't really care. It's just, it's a waste of time. There is a message that they're trying to get across, and that message is very poorly executed, and the parallel that they're trying to draw honestly doesn't work if you get down into the facts and details of the situation. So that is all I'm going to be saying about that. That is all we have. Well, I guess there's one other non-rumor piece that we should talk about ever so briefly. I don't know where I would have put this in a regular episode, so it's almost fitting that it happened when it did, but the passing of John Madden, I guess I could have put that in gaming, right? So the passing of John Madden just yesterday, as I'm filming this, and as you're watching this, hopefully this will be up today, but just yesterday, John Madden passed away. I didn't add it to the notes because I apparently spaced it off as when I was doing the notes, but man, Madden passed, and it's kind of a strange passing because he's only like nerd adjacent, but I mean, very nerdy about the football. So interesting though, just how that potentially is going to impact the nerd culture, if at all. Either way, sad day. So moment for the passing of John Madden. So all of that other thing, all of the other things, I guess, out of the way. Let's talk about The Matrix. This is probably going to be the meat of the episode, so if you're watching this in shorts, there's a lot more to it, but speaking of the shorts, the real quick TLDR is, go see it. It's great if you are a fan of science fiction and not of spectacle. And so we'll get into the details of what that means in just a moment. So let's start this off proper in the real, you know, get into the nitty gritty of it and say, generally speaking, the red pill types, to coin a phrase or to use a phrase or borrow a phrase or however you want to look at that, the red pill types, the conservatives, the comics gators, the gamer gators of the world, generally speaking, no secrets here. I am usually aligned with their viewpoints by and large. When you get into the minutiae and you get into the kind of more crazy bits, yeah, not so much. But speaking in broad strokes, that's where I usually fit in with my beliefs when it comes to the social politics and the things and the stuff. Not quite as militant as most, but still, it seems logical a lot of the time. This is not one of those times. So the red pills, I will refer to them as, are really on a witch hunt for this movie. I really think it boils down to a couple of things. We'll get into the how I feel about the movie in just a second, but as far as the red pill types go, again, just gonna lean really hard on the metaphor or the symbolism, whatever. It feels to me like a lot of the hate that is being spewed about The Matrix Resurrections really stems from the fact that they didn't want to like this movie, or stems from the fact that they were only a fan of the spectacle of the original movie and not fans of the actual mythology and or just science fiction in general, because this is great. An update of a genre that started in the 80s, cyberpunk. So, I mean, it was almost a religious experience for me watching this movie, because just some of the concepts that we talk about here on the show happened in this movie. And my understanding of those concepts began with the first movie, and then the Animatrix, and then the Matrix sequels. And so, like, all of these things kind of coming to fruition and expanding even more in this movie was fantastic. And if you are looking for that, then this is the movie for you. If you are looking for something that's going to change cinema, much like the very first movie did, this is not the movie for you, because there's nothing new here. There's really nothing new under the sun. So let's put our reasonably nerdy caps on. This is going to be a very weird editing episode, but reasonably nerdy caps on, we're going to kind of go through some of the arguments real quick against this movie from, again, the anti-woke red pillars. So the first argument that I heard was, this is a rehash. This is a movie that is just rehashing the details of the first movie, okay, retelling the same story, retelling the same beats, at least. And yeah, that's of course it is. in part, I would say definitely the second act of this movie is very familiar. The first act has to kind of bring us into the present, so there's some new stuff there that we'll get into. The second act is very largely the first movie in the fact that it has similar beats. So, like George Lucas would say, it rhymes. But that's not exactly a fair argument to make, because the original movies came out 20 years ago, and they kind of had to do that to remind us why we love The Matrix. So again, it detracts from any potential spectacle that could have been in this movie. It detracts from a couple of different things that, honestly, if you're just a fan of science fiction, could have worked better if we didn't have to remind people, hey, The Matrix is this awesome thing. And also, Keanu Reeves apparently learned how to act. But we'll get to that in a second, too. Yeah, it is a little bit of a rehash. I'm not gonna lie. I don't think this is the best movie ever. I don't think that this is the best Matrix ever. Obviously, the best Matrix ever is the first one. But I would put this at least on par with the second Matrix movie, probably even above the second Matrix movie, as the second best in the four movies. So yeah, we'll move on. the next argument, and kind of goes in with this, or at least it's a criticism, is that this is the Last Jedi of the Matrix franchise. No. No. Last Jedi doesn't work. Legitimately, through objective analysis, the Last Jedi does not work on multiple levels. There are a couple of issues with The Matrix Resurrections, which we will talk about in a moment, but it still functions as a movie. It still lives in the same universe, even though, you know, points can be argued and things have been retconned, but by and large, it's still there and it still contributes to the story. The Last Jedi, not so much. This is more The Force Awakens. As I said a moment ago, it's reminding us of why we love The Matrix, much like The Force Awakens reminded us why we loved Star Wars. And then they kind of pooped all over that with the second and third sequel movies in Star Wars. So yeah, no, not Last Jedi. Probably a fair comparison to The Force Awakens. I will give you that. But then the next argument about this is, this movie didn't need to happen. You can't make that argument against any movie, because technically speaking, it's entertainment, and entertainment doesn't need to happen at all, because it is not vital to our survival as beings. So the need to make this movie is irrelevant, because it was going to happen anyway. So this is a very interesting point that we're probably going to be touching on a couple of times throughout the course of this conversation, is that Warner Brothers was going to do this anyway. Warner Brothers is big on the cash grabs these days. And I'm not going to make any arguments against the fact that, yeah, this was kind of a cash grab on the part of the Warner Brothers. So Lana Wachowski saw that this was going to happen, as she very pointedly showed us in the first act of the movie. Saw that this was going to happen without her input, and she didn't want anyone to touch these characters that she and her now sister created. So in order to keep things in the family, she said, I will do this. We need to get X, Y, and Z in line, but I will be part of this process and I will make this a Matrix movie. And that's what we got. That, again, we're going to be touching on that a number of times. I'm sorry if my thoughts are a little bit scattered. I kind of only have a rough outline and I don't have a script. I never script my stuff. Maybe I should try, but it's not how I work. Anyway, so need to happen, irrelevant. The better question to the need for this movie is, does it add anything to the mythology? I have definitely heard that people think that it does not add anything to the mythology, and to them, I would say, were you watching the same movie I did? We'll get into some of those things, but really, where they're expanding existing points of mythology that we got from the movie. You don't even have to get into any of the books or comic books or really even the games. You don't have to get into the storyline of any of those to understand what's going on with this. And there are definitely studio notes in here that probably should not have happened, but I feel like Lana did absolutely fantastic with what she was given to make this movie. All right. So again, we'll get into what I think it did and did not contribute, because that's going to lead us into what Lana thinks she contributed to the conversation and how that really doesn't add up. The next set of criticisms are very similar as well, and they have to do with the actors. So first, we have the argument that Keanu Reeves is way too old to be an action star, and I would say John Wick. And Carrie Ann Moss is way too old and kind of seemed like she was phoning it in. And I would say there's a little bit more of a nuanced argument to be made here in favor of Carrie Ann Moss, and also in favor of Keanu Reeves, because holy crap, when did he learn how to act? Like, I love Keanu, but man, he's not been a great actor. There are some scenes in here, specifically I'm thinking of an interchange between Keanu and Neil Patrick Harris. Neil Patrick Harris, I also believe, is a fantastic actor. But like, just the control and lack of control between those two characters, the analyst and Keanu, or Neo. Keanu is Neo. No, so just the interaction between the analyst and Neo in one very specific scene, as Keanu's kind of realizing who he actually is. And anyway, it was impressive. The way that those two men controlled the screen, even though they weren't the ones behind the camera. It was fantastic. I really, really dug it. Anyway. So the argument in favor of Carrie Ann Moss is, I mean, a lot of people tried to say something similar about Keanu in the first movie, that he was kind of phoning it in because he wasn't a very good actor and he just was there because he was a pretty face. And the argument for Keanu at the time, and that I'm going to make here for Carrie Ann, is I feel like less so back then, because Keanu, again, legitimately was not a very good actor, but less so back then and more so now, it's a conscious decision to make this person a little cardboard through a majority of the movie, because in Keanu's case, he was plugged into the Matrix and didn't know any better. And in Carrie Ann's case, she's plugged into the Matrix and doesn't know any better. So because you see, as the action towards the end starts to ramp up, she kind of starts to come out of that. Granted, her performance definitely is not her best performance she's ever given. There's a much better argument to be made that she was actually one of the better actors in the second and third movies. I'm not going to argue that. I would probably agree with you if you were trying to make that point with me, because, yeah, that's 100% the thing. But when you're playing somebody who's plugged into ostensibly a giant video game that's only purpose is to power a machine world, you can be forgiven for being a little bit cardboard in that, because you're effectively a robot and she's effectively an android who was recreated for this movie. Oh, by the way, spoilers. I'm not gonna be sensitive about spoilers. If you haven't seen The Matrix, oof, you really should, you can join the conversation if you want, but your opinion's not gonna be very well informed. Anyway, so yeah, Carrie Ann is the underwhelming performance that she gives, and it's not super underwhelming, it's just like, I know she's a better actress than that. I've seen Memento. But Carrie Ann, it can be excused away that she is playing somebody who knows nothing other than being in the Matrix. So being that kind of animatronic kind of situation, it makes a little bit of sense mythologically speaking. The other actor argument that people are making against this movie is, why did you recast Agent Smith and Morpheus? Okay, so this one is a little bit more murky because, honestly, they didn't absolutely need that to happen necessarily. They do a fantastic job on the part of Morpheus for sure. The Agent Smith one is a little bit more sticky, but I still feel like they did a great job there as well. But the Morpheus recasting is a beautiful story piece because the actual Morpheus in the mythology has passed on. We are talking about 60 years that have passed since the end of the original story. So he was already kind of an older dude in the mythology. Makes sense that he would have gone after 60 years. At some point in those 60 years, especially since there was another machine uprising and there was more battles and things and stuff. So yeah, that absolutely makes sense that Lawrence Fishburne wouldn't be in this movie. So why bring in Morpheus at all? Again, if you were watching the same movie I was, then they absolutely explain this in a very, very fantastic way. Neo, being that he had to plug back into the Matrix in order to create the Harmony, we'll get to that point in a minute, but he had to, at the end of the story previously, he had to re-become part of the Matrix in order to maintain Harmony. That is slightly retconned from what we saw on screen, because it is kind of implied that he sacrifices his life for this piece. But if you lose your main protagonist, expanding on this story, expanding on this universe that we've created becomes a little bit more difficult. So I understand why they would do that little bit of retcon, because we don't actually see Neo die. We see the machines take him away, but he's theoretically still alive when that happens. So when they wanted to do more story with this wonderful universe that they've created, it made sense that they would be like, no, he didn't die. He didn't sacrifice exactly. He sacrificed himself in so being that he reinserted into the Matrix. And the machines liked the way his power source or the way he maintained balance inside the Matrix, so they did what they could to keep him alive. Hence why he aged less than the rest of the cast. I heard somebody say that, well, because Keanu doesn't age, that's why they had to age up everyone else. Like, you really? And that comes from The Quartering. Like, Jeremy, bro, maybe watch the movie next time? I don't know. So, being as that's the direction they went, he is now part of the Matrix, and in order to make him maintain stasis, if you will, he has to believe that the Matrix is not an actual thing. And the direction they go is they make him, a game programmer, which honestly is a weaker plot point, but I mean, it is what it is. So, being as he is the one, he is Neo, he is the guy that did the things in the Matrix and broke all the stuff, he still has in his subconscious these memories and these feelings of what actually is. And so, as part of what he does to appease himself, as part of what he does to make himself happy at work, because we all have those things, it's like, you know what, I'm gonna go do this for 5 minutes because I need to get away from all of you crazy people. For him, was making these little modals, is what they called them. So little, like, programs inside of programs that would just run through things that he didn't realize were memories. He thought they were just ideas that he was working out, but they were actually memories. So part of the subconscious level of him doing this is he recreated Morpheus. Now, this actually blends into a little bit of that script leak that came out about a month before the movie launched, 2 months actually before the movie launched, where they were saying that Morpheus was now an agent. They took Morpheus's memory and they re-encoded him into the Matrix as a means to control Neo, and that's not exactly correct. I think that script, honestly, to take a little side tangent, I think that script was somebody who was a part of the production on a sort of tertiary level, in that they probably saw maybe a few of the dailies throughout the course of filming and tried to write their own version of the script based off of a few of the things that they saw, because some of the stuff that they had in that script really is close, but none of it is 100% accurate. So we'll just say that. Anyway. So the recasting of Morpheus is required because A, the original Morpheus is dead. B, this new Morpheus is based off of memories that are so hidden inside of this man's subconscious that he can't 100% recreate anything. Hence why the details of that opening scene are a little bit different all over the place. So the Morpheus, I thought that was absolutely fantastic way to reintroduce that character as a program based on memory, or as an AI almost, based on a human memory of a person that human then encoded. It was continuing. I'm rambling. I'm probably going to do that a lot because Matrix. But then the Agent Smith argument. So honestly, this would have worked better if after the first movie, they had recast the Agent Smith role. Now hear me out. I love Hugo Weaving. I think Hugo Weaving is one of the greatest actors of our time. That being said, in order to make this work 100% inside of the mythology that they set up, what do I mean by they set up? So between Matrix 2 and Matrix 3, so I can't remember the subtitles, I apologize, Revolutions and whatever. I get somebody, oh, he's not a huge fan, he doesn't remember the subtitles of the second and third movie. Quiet, you. I haven't watched them for probably 10 years, so you probably haven't watched them for 20. I got you there. Anyway, so between the second and third movies, the actress that played the Oracle passed away, sadly. In order to make that fit inside the universe, we got introduced to the concept of reskinning, effectively, programs inside the world of the Matrix. So when something happens to a program inside the Matrix, they come out different, and that manifests as a different look inside the user interface, if you will, the things that the people see in order to keep them happy. So we got the new actress for the Oracle, and then we got introduced to a fantastic piece of lore that I honestly think is brilliant. So it brings me back to Hugo Weaving. If when Neo, at the end of the first movie, set Agent Smith free when he jumps into him and then he explodes. Granted, that looks like he's killing the agent, sure, but if you look at it from a point of one piece of software changing another piece of software, so Neo being the rogue piece of software at that time, changing Agent Smith, who was part of the Matrix, then it would have made sense, going along with the reskinning idea, would have made sense if in the second and third movie, it was a different actor playing Agent Smith. What they did do was they changed some character traits of Agent Smith, which I also thought was brilliant. But in order to make, and they couldn't have foreseen this, so I don't blame them for this, but in order to make this recasting make sense, that would have had to happen, make the most sense, I guess. So that is what's happened here. We have viral Agent Smith. We have Agent Smith, who is this giant rogue program who is trying to take over and remake the Matrix in his own image. Very, very literally. And if you played the what was the name of the video game? Enter the Matrix? If you played that, then you really saw exactly what I mean when I say very literally. Anyway, so we have Viral Agent Smith. He's become this giant thing, and he gets plugged into the source because that battle at the end of the third movie, Revolutions, I'm pretty sure is what the third movie was, the battle at the end of the third movie is Agent Smith and Neo fighting for really no reason, because the only thing that the machines need is they need Agent Smith to infect Neo, because Neo is plugged in at the source so that they can decode this virus, Agent Smith, and eradicate it. And what we know, based on information we get from the second movie, is that the machines are not exactly the greatest at eradicating rogue programs, because that's how we get the Merovingian and the ghosts and all of the craziness that was the big car chase scene and such in the second movie. So when we learn that information, when we see that the machines have tried to eradicate Agent Smith and they have largely been successful, then it makes sense that we have a new actor playing Agent Smith in the fourth movie, because he's been reprogrammed effectively. He's been changed. I guess reprogrammed would imply that he's now part of the Matrix again, and that's not the case. I find it interesting that they didn't have a more smooth explanation of this, because how would he become Neo's partner in business if he was still a rogue program? I feel like that's a pretty high profile for a rogue program to have, but he is Agent Smith, and he did, again, remake the Matrix in his own image at one point, so it can be excused. Either way, elegant enough to make sense in the larger mythology of the Matrix. So if you, again, were a big fan of the mythology and not the spectacle, that is appeasement enough. That is definitely fan service enough. And so we're spending a lot of time here again, rambling a little bit more. We're gonna move on. So that kind of leads us into, because we have mythology things that are established in the first three movies, expanding in this movie. So let's talk about those other things that expanded the mythology in this movie. We have a few good things and then one really big kind of glaring, I don't necessarily want to say bad thing, but bad thing. So first good thing is the evolution of the relationship between the humans and the machines, who now prefer to be called sentients. This is my favorite part of what this adds to the mythology, because we got a glimpse of this, if you watched the Animatrix, we got a glimpse of this in one of those shorts where they were convincing robots to come over, or the machines rather, to come over to the human side. It was a very kind of psychedelic, didn't make a whole lot of sense when you got into like the actual visuals of the short, but it was a really cool short and is a very awesome concept of artificial intelligence not being a slave to its programming and being able to evolve beyond what it was programmed to do. And that's, again, something that we've talked about a number of times, especially in the world of like Star Wars, say, when you have a character like Luke Skywalker in the Holy Trilogy, who is really largely the only person on screen who's treating the sentient robots like they are sentient beings. So This isn't quite to that level of, or the same level, I guess, but still awesome. I think I enjoy this more than that little detail of the Holy Trilogy Star Wars. It's honestly, to me, to my super nerdy, loving the cyberpunk stuff kind of brain, I feel like that evolution, that whole relationship between the sentients and the humans, really could be its own movie. Like, that's how much I love that concept. I feel like there's a fantastic story to be told there that didn't need to be told in any great detail to make this movie work, but I think it's a fantastic detail to add to this universe. I think it's definitely a positive addition to this mythology. Being as I honestly have never been able to get my hands on the Matrix comic books for, I mean, plethora of reasons that we're not going to go into. I don't exactly know the contents of the comics, but I don't believe this is a concept that has been expanded on much in the larger Matrix universe at all. So very interesting and awesome to see it on screen here. The next thing that I think is a fantastic contribution to the Matrix mythology is the evolution of the Matrix itself, the control program that is the Matrix, how that evolves through the from one iteration to the next. So the iteration that we got in the original trilogy is an iteration of it that was created by a program known as the Architect. The Architect failed because Neo chose to not reinsert the way they wanted him to, only on his terms and so on and so forth. So the Architect ostensibly failed. In his place, we got a new control program called the Analyst. And this is going to lead us into other things, but I find it very awesome to see how, again, artificial intelligence can go beyond and change and evolve and things. And it's such a great conversation to have considering where we are as a race as it is now. So yeah, the potential conversation that this creates is really the thing that I think I'm latching onto. The other positive thing that I think this contributes to the larger mythology conversation, what have you, of the Matrix is the red and blue pill. So this is going to lead us into the final area of this conversation. Again, I told you it's going to be a long one. So we have the acknowledgement, at least from the protagonists, the main character group, all of them, there is a conversation that is being had about the necessity of the red and blue pill. Because you already know, to quote Trinity, you already know the answer. And then Morpheus, in this movie, saying, there was no choice. You already knew what you had to do. You didn't have to make a choice. You were going to do it anyway. So I'm going to use some terminology, but the kind of abolishment of the binary of the red and blue pill. There is a political motivation behind this as far as the writing is concerned, but we'll definitely get to that in a moment. But I think it is, again, a greater conversation. This is opening the door to a greater conversation to be had, much more philosophical, but still fantastic and a positive addition to this, albeit minor addition to this conversation that we have called The Matrix. So going from the positive additions, we have one pretty sizable negative addition. It is a retcon. And this is, again, going to lead us into the final section. So the negative addition is they retconned what the One is. The entirety of everything that I have been exposed to. So I am definitely leaving the door open for some of the, at least one of the comic books to have changed this, though I'm pretty sure all of the comic books are not considered canon. So there's that. But all of these things are showing us, are telling us that there is one being, there is one person that is born every however often, every iteration of the Matrix, let's say, that can rewrite and change to his whim, or to their whim, I guess is more appropriate, however they want, and they can make things better for the humans and worse for the sentients, the robots, the machines. One person. There were five before Neo. Neo is the sixth, and he is the one that breaks the mold of that one person. Understood. Now, in this movie, they retcon that, and it is one relationship. They kind of leave that terminology a little murky, because I don't know, reasons. Like there is no reason to have done this. This is my one huge issue with this movie is that, and this is why I think that the average score right now on Rotten Tomatoes is something like 67%. Maybe it might be up to 70, it might be down to 65, I don't know, but something along those lines. I think that maybe a 75 to an 80 would be much more appropriate, but I can understand why it's as low as it is. I also understand why it started off much lower than that because, again, two kinds of fans. Anyway, so this leads us into the when you change the essence of the story that you're trying to tell, your change that the one person can make a difference, whatever you want to, you know, whatever you want to slap on there as the meaning to you, all is kind of based around this one person being awesome. When you change, and this one person didn't do it alone, like they definitely needed help from other elements inside of their life and definitely needed a support structure. Morpheus was that support structure. Trinity was that support structure. All of the crew of the Nebuchadnezzar and all of the other ships that were involved in the second and third movies, all of them are support structure. Niobe was support structure to a lesser extent. All of these things. The biggest, though, the biggest support and the biggest involvement outside of Neo, as far as this the original story goes, was Trinity and Morpheus. Trinity and Morpheus. Trinity and Morpheus. He couldn't have done this without their help. That is absolutely true. What this movie is saying is that he only did it because specifically Trinity was there. Like, she is such a badass character on her own right. She didn't need additional badassness given to her for really no reason. Support structure is fine, but if you have this whole narrative built around the one, and now it's the two, you're really changing a lot of elemental things that you were trying to get across with the original story. So that is kind of the big glaring issue. And there is, let's get into reasons now behind this. So the reason, we'll start with the pills. The reason they decided that they were going to acknowledge the illusion of the binary choice is, I mean, you can kind of see where this one's going. There's actually a couple of reasons as given by the other writers in the room in a recent interview. They were talking about how they wanted to reclaim the term red pill because it's been hijacked or kidnapped or something by people who they don't agree with because reasons. They're trying to lessen the impact of this thing that they created because the thing that they created has been ostensibly co-opted by the people they disagree with. They don't like, then one of the writers very specifically called conservatives Nazis and fascists. So that's fun. They don't like that idea. But when you create a binary to tell your story, I think your point becomes lesser. so when you are trying to make your villain as villainous as possible, Neil Patrick Harris does a wonderful job. When you make your villain as villainous as possible, and you're trying to somehow conflate this villain with these people that you disagree with, in this case, conservatives, then you should probably make the villain use terminology similar to the people you dislike in the real world. That would make sense to me. What the villain in this movie says, though, because they're attacking the conservative phrase as coined by Ben Shapiro, facts don't care about your feelings. There is a line in this movie, a number of lines actually, a small conversation is had about the fact that facts are so difficult to get around. And so feelings are much easier to control people with. I feel like you're making the point for the conservative side. Your villain is utilizing feelings to manipulate the entire matrix. Because the previous villain used facts and that was difficult. Like, am I the only one who sees this? I don't understand how this was supposed to serve any sort of liberal agenda at all. But I don't know. That's just me. I am biased. It's okay. That is kind of the genesis of a lot of things, is their want and desire to do that. That leads us into the jumbled allegory, which is the big last section I keep alluding to. So, we'll start with the jumbled allegory that was the original Matrix. And this is all after the fact. We didn't learn any of this information, though it has been confirmed that yes, in fact, the tertiary character of Switch was originally going to be kind of sort of trans, in that in the Matrix, I believe she was supposed to be a she in the Matrix, and in the real world, a he. She was supposed to be female in the Matrix and male in the real world, or vice versa. I can't remember exactly, but that has been confirmed from other sources aside from the Wachowskis. So yes, I believe that was a thought that somebody had that got shot down probably relatively early in the process. Irrelevant. I think it would have been an interesting concept. I think it would have been a whole lot of fun to explore in the greater conversation. I don't think that it's super relevant to the actual conversations that the Matrix brings up. Going further along, the new movie, The Resurrections that we're talking about, is supposed to be Lana's big trans allegory. This is an allegory for how trans people see the world or react to the world or interact with the world. I don't know. And either, I think, does anybody else who was involved in the making of this movie, because anywhere that you look that potentially that allegory could be made, it's actually being made in the opposite direction. So I've heard one argument that says, well, the allegory is the blue pills that Neo has to take in order to stay in the Matrix, in order to stay controlled by the Matrix. He's taking all these blue pills. That's an allegory for the hormones that trans people have to take. Well, no, it's not, because when he stops taking them is when he becomes the person that he's supposed to be. So if the moral you're trying to say is we have to take these pills to be who we're supposed to be, then making your primary protagonist stop taking the pills in order to become who he's supposed to be isn't the same. It's actually exactly the opposite. So that one doesn't hold water. And then the other one that took me a second to kind of digest was the actual allegory is, as he's being told who he is in the Matrix, that's the allegory for it doesn't sit right in his brain. He doesn't believe that he is Thomas Anderson. He believes at some deeper level, even though it might not be conscious all the time because of these pills, that the pills are a metaphor for what you're being told through society to be, is the allegory we're going with here. So these pills tell you who you are. And you know that you are something else, right? So that's the really real basic version of this. So when you stop taking the pills, you should become who you know you are, or who you are supposed to be. Well, that brings us back to the changing of the one. Because we have changed what the one is, because we have very fundamentally changed the story based around that element, that's no longer holding water either. That you could make that argument for the first movie. 100%. I can see that standing ground. That definitely has legs of, well, when you're in the Matrix, you're being told what to be, and when you're in the real world, you can be who you are. I see that as a trans allegory. Absolutely. In Resurrections, it doesn't work because he does not become who he is just by being outside of the Matrix. He becomes who he is when he is with Trinity. So that brings us to the last piece of this, because all of these agendas are so diametrically opposed to one another, we know that the point that Lana was trying to make was not that the nuclear family is a good thing, that the joining between two people, in this case very specifically a man and a woman, I'm not saying that's necessary. I'm just saying that's what's going on. The relationship between two people is best, and that is how change happens. That is how positive change happens, even. So that's almost, it's not 100% there, because this allegory is jumbled from top to bottom, but that's almost saying that the nuclear family is the ideal and not this weird agenda-driven single mother stuff that we've been seeing a lot. I am absolutely not disparaging single mothers. I was raised by a single mother, so like I understand the issue, but like, that's not what's being told here. That's what they think they're doing. They think they're doing this big female empowerment by giving Trinity all of these extra abilities and all of this extra stuff that was unnecessary because she was already integral to this story as Trinity. So it's a big mess when you try to get to what they were trying to add to the conversation. What they actually added to the conversation is absolutely worth the time watching this movie. And I think that's my final point here, is the runtime of this movie. 2.5 hours long. It's perfect. That is absolutely how long this movie needed to be. You got all of the character, I would argue there was a little bit of room to kind of arrange some of the pieces better to get better character development for, like, say, Agent Smith. But given what we have, there is fine character development for the new and returning characters that have changed somewhat. And also to tell the story that they wanted to tell in the broad strokes. The things that they unconsciously or maybe consciously added to the conversation that are legitimate additions to the conversation are 100% worth the time. It felt like exactly where it needed to be. It wasn't one of those movies where it was like, oh man, I really wanted another 20 minutes of this movie in order to flesh something out better or something like that. Or I felt like, whoa, this was really dragging. It could have been probably a half an hour shorter. None of that applies. I got out of there. That was exactly 2.5 hours long. That's exactly how I feel like it should have been. So that is what I have to say about The Matrix. Here we are 20 minutes later. And I apologize if you disagree with me, but let's have a conversation. Honestly, The Matrix in large part is very easily, arguably, the genesis of why I even started this channel, because I used to have these conversations with people close to me who have since moved on and or moved away from me, and I cannot have them as easily and as often, so I started the channel to have these conversations with you. But the conversation around The Matrix is what got my brain into doing the things that have led me here. So I would love to continue that conversation, be it on the philosophical level, be it on the science fiction level, be it on the level of movie making, because that is something that I've been studying recently as well. So if you want to have that conversation, writing the story, I think there's a fantastic argument to be made that this is the best they could have done with what Warner Brothers wanted to happen. So let's have that. Whatever conversation you want to have about this, I am game. 100%. Let's have that on the social medias or down in the comments. Either way, let's get into rumors. Oh my lord, that was a long trip, but I think it was worth it. So, rumors. We only have a few, but they're fun, so let's get into that. First thing, starting things off, because of course we are, Spider-Man rumors. Oh my good lord, I figured movie came out, it's gonna be a while before we hear some Spider-Man rumors. No, it was pretty immediate. So we have a plethora of rumors surrounding Sony and Spider-Man and related properties. So we're just gonna tackle all of those right now. So the first group of these, because there are two groups, first group of these is actually kind of in succession of one another. So we got rumor that there is going to be an Electro movie starring Jamie Foxx. Actually, the rumor starts by saying that Andrew Garfield and Jamie Foxx both have signed on for multiple projects, one of which likely being Jamie Foxx's Electro movie and potentially Andrew Garfield interacting at least for a moment as the Sony surrogate for Spider-Man. Multiverse is a beautiful thing. And we'll get into this in the second grouping of Spider-Man rumors, but I feel like it is definitely in their best interests to capitalize on the multiverse and interact with that as much as possible. But again, we'll get to that in a moment. So that is the first two rumors. Jamie Foxx, Andrew Garfield coming back for multiple movies, multiple somethings, according to the rumor. And then it goes on to say this third point, that Tobey Maguire Spider-Man has signed on for two returns, though they are not going to be starring roles. They are going to be as support. So Tobey Maguire is very likely going to make a return, probably not necessarily in Doctor Strange in the Multiverse as any sort of significant part, but probably Secret Wars. I would put money on seeing all three Spider-Men again in Secret Wars at this time. So let's tackle those three things first. We'll say the Andrew Garfield returning for some sort of starring role, some sort of Spider-Man, the only Spider-Man in the movie kind of role. I'm gonna put that at about 65%. This one feels probable, but I feel like there's definitely evidence that says maybe not. Then the second part of this is the Electro movie and Jamie Foxx returning multiple times as Electro these are all Sony movies specifically, at least these two. So Jamie Foxx returning, that's about 70%. I feel like he's at a point in his career where he really likes doing the superhero thing, because I mean, he's going to be Spawn. There's all of the things. So he did that Netflix movie a year or two ago. So yeah, I feel like this is pretty strong. There's a little bit of wiggle room, I feel like, here, but yeah, I would not be surprised if this one comes to fruition. And then Tobey Maguire coming back as Spider-Man for two other movies, also a 70% likelihood. This seems very probable. I feel like Tobey Maguire just is at a point in his life where he wants to do right by the fans. So this would be the way to do that, really. So that's the first group. The second group of rumors is two rumors, and they kind of are diametrically opposed. So the first rumor says that at the end, again, spoiler alert, if you have not watched Spider-Man, I think you live under a rock, but if you care about spoilers and you haven't seen it, this is your warning. So the post-credit scene where we see Eddie Brock, we see Venom, we know by the post-credit scene in Let There Be Carnage that he has changed universes. It was not a snap that they alluded to. It was a universe switch. So now we know he is in the MCU, at least when this scene starts and when this movie starts, theoretically. So he is in the MCU universe, and when he gets blipped back into the Sony universe, a little black piece is left. So the rumor is that little black piece that he left, the little bit of Venom that he left in the MCU, is the exact purpose of why they brought him in the MCU to begin with, so that they can incorporate the Venom symbiote into the MCU proper without necessarily needing to do anything crazy with Tom Hardy. So that is the first rumor. The second rumor is a little bit more convoluted. The second rumor is that the next Venom movie is in fact going to see Venom go up against Spider-Man. It says very specifically Spider-Man and not which Spider-Man, but it is going to play with the multiverse. Which version of the multiverse, we don't really know. Is it going to be the Spider-Verse specifically, so just the characters that Sony has access to, or is it going to be some sort of evolution of their contract where we're going to see interactions with Venom and the actual MCU multiverse? That remains to be seen. But that is the rumor, that Venom is going to be exploring the multiverse in his next movie. Again, kind of goes against what we saw in the last one, because if you believe the previous rumor, then Venom is done with the multiverse because he doesn't have magical powers, and nobody in the Sonyverse has magical powers yet, because we haven't been introduced to Madame Web. So either way, because of the lack of magic so far in Sony, the first rumor says that was the only reason he was in the MCU, is so we could have some sort of symbiote action there. The second rumor says, no, he's going to be in the multiverse, and that is the point of him coming to the MCU. So This we're going to do a little bit differently. Which one of these is more likely? One of these things just doesn't belong here. I think the first rumor is the accurate rumor, and the second rumor is wishful thinking. I think it is more plausible that the contract parameters between Marvel and Sony are as such that they are not going to evolve, at least at this point in time. Doing the first rumor still leaves the door open for the second rumor. That is still a possibility, but I don't think that one's going to happen anytime soon until we get contract renegotiations again in presumably 5 to 7 years. So, I think the first rumor is the accurate rumor. We're not going to put a percentage on it just because I think that that's the direction they're going. I'm trying something new with the rumor section. All right, leave me alone. The next rumor we have is a recurring rumor at this point, and this is one that I really enjoy. And that is Ghost Rider. This rumor has been kicking around for a little while now and is being fanned by the actor rumored to be playing Ghost Rider. Norman Reedus is again back in the rumor mill from another source. And this time, there has been credit given to Norman, kind of fanning the flames a little bit. Presumably because he wants to play Ghost Rider, but also potentially because he is playing Ghost Rider and can't make the announcement until the announcement has been made by Disney. So, likelihood that Norman Reedus is going to be playing Johnny Blaze in the next Ghost Rider movie, that's specifically who they call out in. I don't remember if it was this one or it was an older one, but either way, that's what they're saying Norman Reedus is going to be playing is Johnny Blaze, iteration of Ghost Rider. Yeah, we're putting that at 50% still, just because, like, I think it's Reedus saying, I want to be Johnny Blaze, and the source is super not great this time too, but it is multiple sources, so maybe I can bump that up a little bit to about 60%, but I feel like that's as far as I can comfortably go with the likelihood on this one. Our next rumor has Star Wars in the title, so you know it's gotta be good. Maybe. We have a new rumor that Star Wars Tales of the Jedi is going to be the next animated series that we're going to be getting from Lucasfilm over at Disney. This one has, so the rumor broke, and then about 2 days later, there was an addition to the rumor because the company, I'm sorry, I have to read this directly from the notes, Icon Creative Studios. They are an animator. They have done a number of other animated series. They have posted recently that they are looking for somebody to work on an undisclosed Lucasfilms project. The IP is not known, but it is definitely a Lucasfilm production. That is a little too vague for my sensibilities. I feel like it that really leaning into this a little bit, but we don't know exactly what it is. There has not been any corroborating evidence aside from this one source. So we're putting this one at about 60% likely for that one. And then our final rumor is a gaming rumor, and I kind of like the way this one's going. So it is another Fortnite rumor, because Fortnite is where all of the crossovers are happening these days. This one is saying that Microsoft is signing on to license the Doom Slayer character for Fortnite. This is a decent source, generally speaking, but I feel like it is a source coming from a secondary source. I feel like I'm the tertiary in this equation. So I'm not certain that the source's source, to, you know, jumble words, is as accurate as they think they are. Because if this is the case, if Microsoft is in fact starting to license their IP out to other places for cross promotion, such as Fortnite, which is ostensibly what all of this is, would not they choose Master Chief first? I mean, I understand Halo Infinite just came out, so maybe the marketing team was like, we really want to lean on Halo Infinite. We don't want people to play Master Chief outside of our game, so choose somebody else. Then, yeah, I can see how that would go to Doomslayer at that point. I still feel like there's potentially something else that Microsoft would do instead of Doom Slayer, because that is a bit of a controversial situation as far as like the blood and guts involved with the Doom franchise. But I don't know, maybe that's just me. That's my, just my perception of corporate America and the way they perceive the rest of us plebs. So yeah, we're putting this one at about 40% because of all of that. And that is probably the longest off-season episode I will ever do, unless another Matrix movie comes out, and at which point we'll probably just do a proper review of it and cover all this stuff then. Either way, thank you, nerds, for sticking to the end. I appreciate your faces. Find me on the social medias. Check out the rest of the videos here, or, you know, if you're listening on audio, I apologize. I've been referencing video this whole time, but if you're listening on audio, I appreciate your faces. Don't forget to subscribe. Find all of the other things that I am doing, because I do all of them all by myself. Thank you very much, nerds. We'll see you in the next one. Before we go, always, always remember that if it's generally nerdy, it's probably here.